ranked one of America's top research universities, the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee plays a vital role in shaping the future of Milwaukee and Wisconsin. UWM's diversity, academic excellence, and world-class research contribute to the region's economic development and quality of life. Meet the people behind the creativity and discoveries on UWM today. Here's the host, Tom Lujack, Vice Chancellor of University Relations.
In a few weeks, the first total solar eclipse on America's mainland in nearly 40 years will occur as the moon passes between the sun and the earth. Anticipation of this amazing astronomical event is causing a lot of excitement and interest in the study of our stars. On this edition of UWM Today, we have a special guest in the studio who, pardon the pun, can shed light on the upcoming eclipse and talk about a wonderful resource at UWM, attracting thousands of people each year to the UW-Milwaukee campus. Jean Creighton is director of the Manfred Olson Planetarium. She has a PhD in astrophysics, and her excitement about studying our skies is contagious, and we're so glad you're with us in the studio today.
It's great to be here, Tom.
So, solar eclipse, nothing that a lot of listeners perhaps have seen in their life, since we have a lot of young listeners here at WUWM. It has to be a special time for you as you look at what's coming up in just a few weeks.
I have been thinking of very little else for the last year to prepare for the event. Even though we're not in what's called the path of totality, so we're not going to get a total solar eclipse in Milwaukee, we're getting 86%. And I made a decision a year ago that if the people are getting 86%, I'm getting 86% and I'll be staying here. This will allow us to have a half day big celebration. A friend described it as a carnival. We'll have live music and food trucks and planetarium programs and, of course, telescopes to look at the eclipse on the day itself, midday on August 21st, which is a Monday.
You say it's midday. Is it exactly at noon or there somewhere about then?
It peaks at 1:18.
1:18.
Local time. And it starts at around noon, where you'll be able to start seeing the darkening, and it wraps up by 2:30 or so.
So how dark will it get? I mean, will it feel like twilight when we're at 86%?
The sun is very bright, so it won't feel like twilight. In totality, you'll be able to see stars and some of the planets, but not here. We will be able to see enough of a darkening that people aware of their surroundings would be looking up and saying, okay, there's something strange going on.
Is there a storm cloud? But it's not a storm cloud that day.
That's right. We sure hope there are no storm clouds because if we have a lot of coverage, of course, we won't be able to see it at all.
Then it's just a really dark, cloudy day.
Yeah.
Talk about how to look at this eclipse safely. What should we be careful to do or not do that day?
People sometimes forget that even the balance of 86% is definitely enough to damage your eye, your retina. So you would want to get specific glasses in the planetarium. Of course, we'll sell these and have them available. You need to block basically, you have to need a strong enough filter to block 99% of the light. So if you were to test it against a lamp, you would see no light at all. It would seem like it's impenetrable. You want on the side to read ISO, which means that it's been approved from an international astronomical organization for safety.
So no sunglasses. Don't take any chances
on
that.
Homemade darkened pieces of glass, all that stuff. It's not worth your eyesight. It really isn't.
Now, is it possible to also project that image onto paper? I thought I recall somewhere that there's another way that you could capture the image without looking directly into the sun.
You can, but it's... what can I say? I think it's better to get the glasses because it can be, depending on what ratios you're using, it could be that the image of the sun that you project is even smaller than the sun itself, which would be underwhelming, I think.
You mentioned the celebration. I presume that'll be taking place on the street right around the planetarium on the west side of the UWM campus.
Conveniently, there is a beautiful field on the corner of Maryland and Kenwood, a green field, a perfect place for a picnic.
Ah.
So our summer, when we were thinking about what angles can we hit on August 21st, schools haven't begun mostly, so we thought, imagine having live music, food trucks for people who want to purchase their lunch, but people can bring a picnic. The lawn is huge. You can just sit out and connect with the cosmos.
And in this case, not have that much sun to give you a sunburn that day because of the eclipse.
The eclipse is going to last for a few minutes. I dare say you should bring some sunscreen.
You know, your timing is also very good because that location at Kenwood and Maryland, although there's a great big green field right now, in just a few months, the university breaks ground on a wonderful $10 million entrepreneurship center that will be going up right where you're going to be eating your picnic lunch. So good thing the solar eclipse is coming in August and not in November.
I confess that we asked the architects just to make sure that that building will start after the event. So we were very happy to hear that.
How many eclipses have you seen or witnessed yourself in your lifetime?
This will be my third. I've seen one in outside of Athens with my uncle. He said, oh, there's an eclipse of the sun, must see it. And I remember it very clearly. It wasn't a total eclipse, but it was pretty good. And then I saw an eclipse of the sun. I'm ashamed to say that I didn't know it was happening, but I was at the airport in Dublin and I looked up and I thought, I guess there's an eclipse of the sun happening right now. I was pleased to so serendipitously seeing it.
Now, these days, because we know a fair amount of what happens with our sun and with the stars, we can predict when the eclipses will occur. But 100 years ago, 1,000 years ago, in the history of man, that wasn't always the case. A solar eclipse could trigger not awe, but even panic, right?
Well, funny you should mention that. We have done quite a bit of studying of the cultures and history around eclipses in preparation for a play that we're working on. And one of the things we found out was that in about 2,500 BCE, two Chinese astronomers got their heads cut off because they did not predict correctly the solar eclipse. And the reason for that was they were 6 hours off. So there was a solar eclipse just 120 degrees away on the Earth. So considering that they had managed to predict it within 18 years and 11 days, it's too bad that the 6 hours tricked them.
But isn't that amazing? Thousands of years ago, people were still able to predict because back then, they were tracking the sun very closely, right?
They were. I think the key point is that they realized there were patterns. I don't think they could determine it necessarily from first principles. You need a lot of detailed measurements to figure that out. But they realized that there are patterns that repeat. And if people did look at the sun and stars carefully, they had records to see, this pattern repeats. So if I have one now, then I'll get another one approximately at this time and so on. So it's fascinating, isn't it?
I know you're an astrophysicist and not a psychologist, but let me see if you have a response. Is it fair to say that people have reacted differently to eclipses? I mentioned some looking at it in awe, but for some people, they viewed it as an omen of perhaps bad things
of
that
course,
were about to happen.
Of course. Imagine if you think that the sun is a god or something you can count on for sure, if it all of a sudden goes dark, then that, of course, is alarming. And people used it sometimes for their own purposes. So Thales of Miletus, a scientist, had said to a king, look, you need to stop this war because if you don't, the sun is going to go out. And the king went on and did whatever. And when the eclipse happened, then both armies involved said, okay, now there's a clear sign. We need peace right now.
So early signal that science can go ahead and help influence politics too.
Bring peace. Yes. Yes.
You mentioned the food trucks. You mentioned some of the music. I understand that you've also brought theater into this celebration of the solar eclipse. Tell us about that.
I would be delighted to. Robin Mello, who is a theater professor at UWM, is a personal friend of mine, and she has had a keen interest in astronomy for as long as she can remember. I have had the pleasure of having a great storytelling father, so I have been also interested in stories in addition to stars. So we've started collaborating some years ago, and we decided that the time had come, given that the eclipse is here, to write a play where my staff can bring the stories and the information that they find interesting and that they could perform it in the planetarium from three points of view, from a science point of view and the significance of eclipses from a scientific point of view, from a cultural point of view, and from a historical point of view. So this has been great fun because it's kind of forced us to look a little deeper and find the things that capture our imagination and that we can sell first amongst ourselves and then we hope to a broader audience.
Who will you be presenting the play to?
This is intended for the general population, anybody. I recommend people over four just because children under four might not like the dark in the planetarium to see stars. We do need, of course, the room to get dark. But it's intended for all members of our community. In fact, we hope that we will have as many as possible.
And the play will go on for how long?
It starts on July 17th. Every Friday, we're going to add the Thursday just before the eclipse to give people who might be working or otherwise unavailable on the Friday. And we'll also have two shows on the eclipse day itself, obviously not when the eclipse is happening, but either for people who want to come and see a show and then have lunch and see the eclipse, or they want to see the eclipse and then see the show.
Well, that's a perfect segue to talk about the planetarium itself. Again, many people have been through your doors. You've done a marvelous job over the last 10 years of bringing in, I understand, more than 100,000 people have come in to see planetarium shows, which is a real testimony to the good work and the good programming that you've been able to put into that wonderful facility. But for those who haven't been there, describe the planetarium. What makes it tick?
Well, I think what makes it tick was several things. First of all, it is a fairly intimate space and the programming is live. So when you enter there, you're not going to see a movie or something that's in the can. It's a live person there who responds to the audience. You have a person who can answer questions, a person or people who are really excited about sharing what they know about the sky. One of my personal challenges is to make sure that I can bring some of these elegant ideas to people. So much of what we know in astronomy is so cool if you think about it, but to make sure that you take away the jargon, take away the details sometimes, and kind of stick with the cool idea. To that end, both Robin and I went to the Alan Alda boot camp on communicating science in June, and that was a great project, a very interesting, challenging boot camp, because you realize that sometimes when you are talking about what you know and care a lot about, that little jargon can creep in. So it's good to practice.
And you do a lot of programming for kids, right?
I do. About half. So last year we had over 13,000 people. About half of that is, you know, K through 12th grade school groups. And I love that you talk to kids who sometimes have never seen a dark sky, never. So when you turn off all the lights and they see the Milky Way for the first time, you can almost hear the excitement. You can almost hear the tingling eyes. And, you know, when they leave, sometimes a little kid will come up to me and say, "That was totally awesome." And of course, that makes my day.
Well, you make the day for many, many people with these great shows. And a little later in the program, we're going to let our listeners know how they can become a participant in, a viewer of the programs at the Planetarium. You're listening to UWM Today here on WUWM. So good to have you with us this week. I'm Tom Lujack, and joining us in the studio is Gene Creighton. Gene is the director of the Manfred Olson Planetarium at UWM, which entertains and educates tens of thousands of people throughout the years, over 100,000 coming through to see programs on the skies. Gene, we began by talking today about the upcoming solar eclipse on August 21st and all the programs and excitement and energy that you have with the great event that's coming up. I want to talk a little bit first, before we come back to the eclipse, about your background and what got you interested in looking at the sky. You mentioned a moment ago the youngsters who said, that was totally awesome. When did you have that epiphany moment that told you, I want to study the skies for my career?
My mother says that we were walking down the street when I was about 5, and I looked up and I said to her, Mommy, how are stars born? The truth is, I don't remember this, so we'll have to trust that my mother didn't make that up. It sounds plausible. By the time I was in 9th grade, I knew I wanted to become an astronomer. So I did some research with a career counselor, and she said, oh, no, you can't become an astronomer because your eyesight isn't good enough. And I assumed that there was a confusion there between an astronomer and an astronaut. Because, of course, I couldn't become an astronaut at that time. Now the rules have changed. If you have LASIK, it works. But in any case, so I thought, oh, that's really heartbreaking because I can't do anything about my eyesight. So I realized that the next best thing for me would be to become a physics major. So that's what I did. I finished I got a physics degree from the University of Athens in Greece. And then at my last year, Voyager 2 flew by Neptune. And I saw some snippets on the television and I thought, oh, wow, that is so cool. The images were so beautiful. I thought, I wonder if there's a way to get my hands on that data. I wonder if there's a way. So I was looking for a thesis project as an undergraduate. And I talked to one of the astronomer faculty there, and she said, yes, you can work on Neptune. So, and she assured me that you don't need perfect vision. In fact, that they're blind astronomers. So that kind of, I never looked back. A whole new career opened up for me.
So physics became astrophysics.
That's right.
Wow. Do you ever stop marveling at what the skies can teach us or show us?
No. I think it's, I guess.
Because you've seen a lot. I mean, you've studied a lot.
No, it's true. But I think ultimately it comes down to the same idea that I love the concept that people have the capacity to look at an itty-bitty little dot of light, squeeze it for all it's worth, and figure out what it's made of, how fast it's moving, where it belongs, what makes it tick. I mean, I think that's so special about people, that we are curious and that we can figure these things out.
And we're the only being on this planet that can do that. You've
That's
had
right.
animals, birds looking at, and perhaps their life guided by the stars in terms of mating cycles and the like, but they don't know why. They just respond to the force.
That's right.
Yeah. How has technology changed the world of planetariums? Are you doing shows any differently today than you were 10 or 15 years ago, now that we have amazing satellites and images coming from space that we didn't have perhaps when you were going to school?
I'm sure that different people would give different answers to this question, but I can give you my answer. What I love about modern technology is that I have at my fingertips very current information, so I can update programs at a drop of a hat. We have constantly new information with beautiful pictures available all the time. So I don't take that for granted. I realize that maybe a little before my time, but it used to be that the picture of Neptune was whatever Voyager 2 had, and that's it. That is now forevermore until we send another spacecraft. But now people are constantly updating these things, and you can have the very latest with everyone else, with the scientists practically who ordered the picture, if you will. You can almost see it at the same time.
So you're able to go ahead and make sure that your projections, the images that are going on the ceiling of the planetarium, are almost current, almost real time.
Right.
Well, that, right. So that makes it each time, it makes it possible each time a new satellite goes up with a more powerful lens, a more powerful telescope that's sitting in space to get better and better programs, right?
Yes. Well, so I'll interject here a little bit, because I think ultimately just the new technology is not enough to get a better program. The real key is to try and have a conversation with your audience, meet them where they're at, try and address the things that they might be interested in. And sometimes just more data doesn't help that. It's more context. I think giving context is one of the beauties of what we do at the UWM Planetarium. Give them information, yes, but give them a framework to put that information in so it makes sense.
Talk about your students, the ones who are helping you put these programs together. Do they all want to become astrophysicists themselves?
Most of them, in fact, maybe at the moment, all of them do not. However, I have a very, very talented group of people who are constantly thinking about how the planetarium can do better. What can we do better? From the way we service people, the way we interact, the kinds of technologies that we use in our programs, simpler things like accounting, you name it, everything is on the table for improvement. And I love that. I really feel that I have a group of people who are as committed to the planetarium as I am.
Well, and that is one reason why I want to toot your horn a little bit. Back in June on the UWM campus, the University of Wisconsin Systems Board of Regents held their annual meeting here in Milwaukee. And we're so proud to note that at that meeting, they gave you the 2017 Regents Academic Staff Excellence Award. Really an amazing honor, given the fact that there are thousands of employees in the UW system from the top to the bottom of Wisconsin. And you were selected as the person who is deserving of special recognition for what you've done in terms of serving both the campus and the community.
It is a great honor. It is a great honor. It's very nice to be recognized. I have tried to make the planetarium a place that, you know, the community, but also collaborations with departments around campus, to put the planetarium in the hands and the service of many entities and units on campus. So I think in the last 10 years, I've reached out to over 50 departments. I've had collaborations. You know, we did a Japanese program from the Foreign Languages and Literature Department. We called it poetically Evening in the Land of the Rising Sun this past spring. We had a program with the Caribbean Center for Latin American and Caribbean Studies last year. All of these things just remind us that astronomy is not this isolated thing. It connects to life. And I think that also makes it more inviting to a broader group of people. And we want everybody to come and enjoy stars.
Well, and I promised we were going to give our listeners an opportunity to find out how to connect. So let's make a pitch.
If, okay.
if I'm listening to this program and I want to either come to one of your solar eclipse programs, or maybe come with the kids sometime this fall to see a program, how do I connect? How do I get engaged and make sure I get one of those seats in this wonderful, intimate theater that you have?
I'm thrilled to tell you that in the last 2 weeks, we have enabled buying tickets online in advance. So this is one of these innovations that my staff has enabled. The way you would do that is you would go to our website, which is uwm.edu/planetarium. Or if you're not sure how to spell planetarium, if you Google UWM planetarium, it'll get to our website. And that will have a calendar with all our events, information. Teachers, of course, contact us there as well. So there's a special tab for teachers and private parties, birthday parties, for example. So you go to the website, you see what we have, you see what you're interested in. If you're looking for a public program, that'll all be there in the calendar. If you would like a private party, which sometimes people do, then you would just send an email to the contact there and we will get back to you.
uwm.edu/planetarium.
That is the website.
Very easy to do. Just a couple of minutes left. I want to talk about what your plans are going forward. You said you want more people coming through, so we know that even greater attendance is part of the plan. How about the programs? Do you see those evolving in coming years?
My hope is that we will have a model like a theater does, a rep theater, where there are people doing programs, there are people developing the next program so that I share some of the joy. I really love doing the programs, but I can't deliver to 20,000 people a year. I did 340 shows last year, which is a lot. I feel like my staff need a chance to have some fun too. So they get to present and the audience gets to enjoy multiple voices.
Well, and it's neat. Because the skies are constantly changing, right? So if you've seen one planetarium program, it does not mean you've seen them all.
Oh, no, because we have themes. So each planetarium show is structured in two parts. So we have a whatever the theme is. So this fall, we have a Moons and Myths program in the early, from September to October. And Colors of the Cosmos, November and December. So half the program is the presentation and half the program is stargazing. We go first to the city because it's a little easier. There are fewer stars to kind of deal with. And then we go to that country sky where we can see 3,000 stars without a telescope or binoculars.
And lots of oohs and ahs.
Many, many oohs and ahs.
Jean, thanks so much for taking time to share your story and the story of the planetarium with us on this edition of UWM Today.
It was a pleasure.
That's all for this week. Take care, everybody. We'll see you next week at the same time. I'm Tom Lujack.
You've been listening to UWM Today with host Tom Lujack, the weekly program where you get to meet the people behind one of America's top research universities, University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee. Playing a vital role in shaping the future of Milwaukee and Wisconsin, UWM's diversity, academic excellence, and world-class research contribute to the region's economic development and quality of life. Learn more at uwm.edu.